We're back with more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Bonnie North. One of the things one learns about experiencing the death of a loved one and its aftermath is how darkly funny things can be. We assume the tears and the grief. We even expect them, but we don't usually expect humor. Come Back is a new play by local playwright Neil Haven that opened last week at In Tandem Theater, and it deals with that mix of humor, grief, anger, and exasperation. But most of us aren't tasked by the person we're mourning to undertake a road trip to find the perfect resting place for his or her remains. Neil Haven joins me in the studio now, along with actress Sarah Zintek and director Jane Fleer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Hi, Neil. It has been a while since you've been here, and this is a new play, Come Back, and it is both very funny and very poignant. It's something that a lot of us have to deal with as we get older, but also, in this case, young people, too, having to deal with basically with death.
Right. Yeah. It's a comedy about death. You know, it's funny as a funeral. If you've ever been to a funeral, you know, it's just a laugh a minute. And so when I hit on the subject of death and grief, I thought there's a fun comedy piece.
There's a mine I
right.
need to go it's, into. Yeah.
No, actually, it is quite funny. There's the fun of it started with reading an article about places that will do strange things with your ashes. All the, you know, like you want to do something kooky with your ashes. Here's a list. And it was, I mean, these places are real, that they will put you into bullets or launch you into space or paint a picture, mix the ash with charcoal and paint a portrait or give you a tattoo. And there's these specific companies you can go to, and they're set up to do this. And when I read the article, I thought that's when the germ of the play was there of, oh, that's a journey play. Someone has to go visit all those places for some reason, has to make that decision about which one to do. And then so that was the starting point, and trying to find a reason for that and what that story is. And it became about grief, and it became about realizing relationships and which relationship was what the relationship meant, you know, and through the grieving process, I think people do that's their time to grieving is reflecting. And so it's a memory play. It's got flashbacks in it as, you know, what did this relationship mean? It's over. You know, and we don't have a lot of that in our life where we get to put an end on a relationship. Most of our relationships are ongoing, so we don't maybe reflect on them that much until they end. And then we can actually look at it and say, well, that's how it happened and what did that mean to me? But a lot of the humor is Sky, who Sarah here plays, is sort of manipulated into going across the country to these places, and they're just ridiculous. And
you're carrying the urn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
She's got to go on a road trip with
urn
her friend.
And I have a African gray parrot with me as well. So if you can just imagine that image right there.
Right. Now, who is the person who has died?
Her best friend, Aaron,
okay.
has passed away. And it was she has Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia. I think I said that correctly. You looked at me like yeah, so she has this type of cancer, and she's given 5 years, and don't want to give too much away, but it passes away, you know, before that 5 years, and Sky takes it very hard, you know, doesn't know where to go next. She's kind of the misfit of everything she feels, and she had this great connection with Aaron like no one else, and they have their other friend Mel, played by Stacey Hicks, and they're just a little misfit group together, we've dubbed.
But it's their journey.
Yes.
And, you know, Neil, you were saying something about, you know, relationships, and they do continue in grief. Mm. It's just that one person isn't there to actually be part of the conversation
yep.
directly
right.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the living remain, mm-hmm. you know, trying to figure all of this out.
Yeah.
And some of her journey, I think, is a bit of surprise of just how heavy it is, and coming to terms with how meaningful the relationship was. And,
yeah.
and she, near the beginning of the play, she says things like, well, we were just friends.
Mm-hmm.
I was just her friend,
mm-hmm.
Comparing herself to family members and stuff. And some of the journey is going through it, and I think for her realizing it's okay to be this sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did some research on grief and you know, have my own experience and stuff. And that was some of it, I think, is when people talk about a process of grieving or something, it's part of is accepting it, is,
mm-hmm.
is people saying and other people, loved ones saying, we're going to just hang out while you're sad. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but mm-hmm. you just need to be okay with being bummed out about this for a while
yeah.
and not beat yourself up about that too, because then you're going to be sad in two ways. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and then it slows down the actual process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. of getting through.
Yeah. Yeah, she does not want a process.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who does?
Well, process also means that the journey's going to end, and then you feel like you've lost that person twice. Mm-hmm. And so there's a resistance sometimes, I think, to taking a journey or going through that process, because mm-hmm. then you really feel like you have to say goodbye. And I think what she realizes by the end of the play is that's not necessarily true either.
Right.
That doesn't mean the end of your memories, the end of what you created while they were alive, doesn't have to stop. But you're going to get through the hard part.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you have to step on without them. And that's the part mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about the way this play tackles that is through the humor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because yes. one thing people don't often talk about when you're in that deep, deep, deep grief is how funny things can be. And that there's a reason they call it black humor.
Yeah.
You know,
right. and gallows humor.
And gallows humor and all of that. And you start thinking about the things that the deceased person would find funny, and you're in the middle of these circumstances and you can't help but laugh. Mm-mm.
Or you see the way other people are behaving and it just strikes you so funny and you don't want to say anything to them because that's their process, but you can't help it if they look funny or they're doing something funny or they're reacting funny.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and people can be on pins and needles if somebody's died, and we all have that voice in our head that tells us to be silly, to do, you know, to break etiquette, to you know, if you're in an elevator or you're in a classroom, and it's like, well, you know, what would happen if I just screamed right now? What would our brains do that for some reason? And funerals are that place mm-hmm. where everyone's trying to be so solemn and polite, and most of the people there are sort of at their wits' end, and you see them cracking up. You see family members getting together and just laughing. I joked about it before, but really, when you've been to a good funeral, they're pretty funny. Mm-hmm. You know, and the eulogies can often be very, very funny and touching, and more so when the person was older, when the person was the family was prepared, the death wasn't sad. And it's when I've been to a funeral with somebody who died young, it's there's obviously much more weight to it. But when it's grandpa who had a good life and his son gets to give a eulogy, or his daughter's giving a tale of memories and growing up and things, they're going to tell the funny stories. They're going to tell. He's not in the room. We can tell you when he did this, you know.
Right.
He's done, so now it's up to us. Like you said, the living are going on, so they get to continue telling the story. It's their story now. And so
you kind of take ownership of it.
Right.
Because that person's no longer here to tell the story.
And so it can get sardonic and sarcastic. And,
yeah.
And
particularly if that person was.
Right.
Yeah. So as an actor, you know, and you're both working on your own character, but you also have to think about who this person was, your best friend, that we never meet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not really.
Yeah.
We kind of do.
Yeah.
How is that for you as a process? Speaking of another kind of process.
Yeah, yeah. All I can really do is just put myself into situations where I can, you know, relate to how does it feel with losing this best friend. Yes, growing up, I've lost family members here and there. I can't really tap into anything as deep as what Aaron and Sky were to each other. I mean, I can think about relationships that I've had in that past. That person is obviously gone from my life right now. How did that make me feel, you know? So just, I guess, going off of relationships and friends that I've had is what I can bring into this role.
Do you find that Aaron is, like, taking on a life of his or her own? I mean, and I'm saying that because one of the things in here is Aaron a female friend or a male
female
friend?
Female friend,
okay.
Yes.
Because I know you say that some of them, at the beginning, people can be played by either gender.
Yeah, the script is written in a way that a director can choose the gender for each character, and that allows for – it can really change the story because we have different sort of relationships depending on the gender. So for this production, Jane, the director here, it was up to her to cast it however she chose. And so we've got Sky as a woman losing her female best friend, Aaron, mm-hmm. and – the other two main characters is Aaron's mother, Val, coming in and is also interested in what's going to happen to the ashes, and that's where we get our conflict and our story. And two different people with very different relationships with the deceased, her best friend and peer and her rather estranged mother. And then the male friend is Mel that, mm-hmm. that Sarah mentioned, who's their buddy at the bird shelter. The three of them, the misfits, worked at a bird rescue, and which is why she has the African gray parrot with her. So for this one, it's a lot about female relationships and mother-daughter. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting then how the, you know, when we've been talking in rehearsals, how there's been sort of a, I think particularly with that arrangement of genders, that Skye gets to learn how Erin is like her mother. Mm-hmm. Even though Erin very much rejected her mother, it's like, oh, there's a stubborn streak there.
Yeah,
that
it's not just the mother was overbearing and pushed the daughter away. I think the two tangled mm-hmm. as mother and mm-hmm. daughters will do. And it was a very strong female voice to me when I read the play. I never entertained the idea of mm-hmm. changing the genders in any way, because the woman-to-woman relationship and dynamic is so different than men-to-men or daughters to fathers or fathers
mothers to
sons. And all of that changes the dynamic that the button pushing that women can do to one another, mm-hmm. I thought just spoke very loudly to me in this play, to find the balance in the play so that you didn't just have a mother who wanted something and was going to steamroll her way into it. I thought, no, I think there's more to the mother than that. I think there's more to the relationship between the deceased and her mother that Skye, even as a best friend, probably didn't know about, probably heard mm-hmm. just one side of it. And there's always two sides. And I think we're finding those times that – and that's been very exciting mm-hmm. to find another dimension to the mother who's also grieving. She lost a daughter, and we can't forget that. And as we go through it, some of these scenes come across a lot differently. They still have that humor. She's and Carrie Hitchcock is fantastic as mm-hmm. the mother and brings some humor to it. But you can't help but go, well, she's got a point. That was her daughter too. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not just this one-sided character. And like I told the cast, I said half of my audience is going to go, well, that mother has a point, because mm-hmm. half the audience is my age.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And mm-hmm. as you say, there's always – at least two sides.
At least, yeah.
You know, every person that's out there has a side. But, Neil, what I love about this is that you've written it in such a way to be so flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, it's almost like you have a brand new play each time.
It's true. I had readings of it before with different mixes of genders. And what was – it was fascinating to just – particularly audience members who got to see it in multiple incarnations, and they say, wow, that is the same dialogue, and it's a very different story if that's a father and son, or if that's two men who were best friends and lost, and the things the audience just starts assuming about the relationships, it just changes it. And what I like is that a director like Jane can say, I heard it this way, this is what it means to me, this is what I'm interested in. She gets to tell – she gets to put her stamp on it in that way and say, this is the story that – interests her or resonates with her and gets to do it. Or the other way is also just to pick the best actors for the part.
Mm-hmm. And then see what happens.
You know, which mm-hmm. we're trying so hard to do with Shakespeare now and say, well, I've got this wonderful woman who could play Hamlet. And we say, well, let her play Hamlet then mm-hmm. if she's going to be great at it. And I had that kind of in mind too. When I didn't have strong feelings about the gender in this play when I started it, I thought, well, let's leave it open. Let's let it be the actor who really resonates with the part. And, you know, that's the fun of theater. We can do that.
Yeah, and it's fun that you're willing to allow that kind of control to not be in your hands necessarily. Mm-hmm. You haven't dictated who these people have to be.
And that came out of, you know, Jane and I have talked about this, that that resonates with the theme too, that in two different ways, that these characters, the theme of this play is that one is that grief is personal. And people want to tell you how to do it, and we mm-hmm. want to tell ourselves how to do it. We
snap
want to say,
out of it, move on.
Why am I
You've
not?
Been wallowing too long. It's like,
right.
Hey, you know what? I'll let you know when I'm done.
Yeah, and we say it to ourselves too. We say, come on, pull up yourself up by your bootstraps. And so part of the journey here again is you get to grieve how you get to grieve, whoever you are. And the other part is this realization of that this best friend was perhaps more partner, soulmate. And so a realization of that of – I get to decide who I love, you know, and that resonates with a lot of things, with the changing of our nuclear families, that we have, you know, half of our kids now are raised by single mothers and don't have the Leave It to Beaver family and things, and they might be raised by a grandma. They might be – there's a story in the play about somebody who wasn't raised by – they were raised by a different relative and things like that, and trying to find those parallels of untraditional relationships and the individual saying, no, this is my most important person. This is who – if I want somebody in charge of my remains, I'm sorry. I didn't pick
– I don't do this to hurt you.
Right.
I do this because she's the best person in my life to take care of me in my death. And then you've got the generation of the mother who says, but it's tradition to do it this way. Mm-hmm. And so I want to do it this way. And she says, well, we can't. I was chosen. But the conflict comes because Skye's not comfortable with having been given that assignment.
I was going to say, that's a huge burden.
It's a huge assignment, a huge burden. It takes her way out of her normal comfort range, which we think that Aaron had in mind to push her along that journey. You can take as long as you want on your journey. Mm-hmm. You can go wherever you need to on your journey. But you got to get moving. You got to take that first step.
We think that Aaron – she realizes Skye's going to wallow in this. She knows how much she meant to Skye. And I think with her making this journey, she knows that Skye is going to try and reject a process of healing. And this is going to be the kookiest way, and know that mm-hmm. she is going to remember Aaron in the best way possible by doing this.
I want to thank all of you for coming in and talking about it. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Neil Haven's newest play, Come Back, opened last week at In Tandem Theater, and it runs through March 22nd. Sarah Zintek plays Skye, and Jane Fleer directed the production. There is more information at WUWM.com. We will take one last break, and then we'll catch up with Wisconsin writer Leslie Kagan and get the inside story of her latest novel, When Lake Effect Returns, on Milwaukee Public Radio.